This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
I'm Melissa Idris with Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han this morning. But guys, let's look at the top business news of the day. We have Indonesia's seizure of a luxury yacht, which was linked to the 1MDB probe. Now, this yacht is called Equanimity. It's a 91-meter luxury yacht. I believe it was award-winning and touted to be the 58th largest yacht in the world. And it was seized in Bali waters. So I believe the vessel was seen sometime last year in Hong Kong waters and also in Thai waters the year before that. So I guess the question is, what's the story here? What's the goss?
Well, Indonesian police said they received a request from the FBI on February 21st to search for the boat, along with evidence of money laundering linked to it. So 34 people, all foreigners, described as crew members, were on the vessel when it was confiscated off the island of Bali yesterday. And apparently, guys, this vessel, right, it has an interior clad in marble and gold leaf, a spa and sauna, a 20-meter swimming pool on deck, and a movie theater, and a helipad as well.
Hence the $250 million price tag for this yacht.
And we were just talking about low-cost flats being 800 square meters and having to study in the living room with the TV blaring.
Right. And then, you know, it makes you wonder whether or not the food served in this yacht is also, you know, as nourishing as what's available to us. I don't know. But anyway, so why are we talking about this? Because this yacht is allegedly owned by Joe Low. His name very much intertwined with the 1MDB saga. So, recall that back in August of last year, the DOJ actually asked for a stay on its civil lawsuits, you know, as they look to seize over $1.7 billion worth in assets allegedly bought with stolen 1MDB money.
Okay, so the question is, now that they have the yacht, do they have Joe Low? Was he on the boat?
Apparently not. So according to Agong Satya Iman Effendi, Director of Economic and Special Crimes at Indonesia's Criminal Investigation Bureau, he said that he didn't know of Joe Low's whereabouts. So I guess he was not on the vessel.
Okay.
And he said that, you know, they've been inspecting the crew since Tuesday and took action yesterday as they had received approval from the courts to do so. But did you know that Joe Low has responded?
Yeah, well, so he has. And apparently he has criticized the DOJ for not providing any impropriety had occurred. You know, so in a statement yesterday...
So not proving any impropriety had occurred.
For not proving that any had occurred. So a spokesman for Joe Low had said that the DOJ had stayed asset forfeiture proceedings, not taken any steps to prove that any impropriety has occurred. And I quote, "It is therefore disappointing that rather than reflecting on the deeply flawed and politically motivated allegations, the DOJ is continuing with its pattern of global overreach, all based on entirely unsupported claims of wrongdoing. We look forward to the court being presented with the actual facts which demonstrate that the DOJ's case is completely without foundation." End quote. So says the spokesman for Joe Low.
Okay, so that was, I guess, a kind of quick response immediately after that. So, I mean, if he's already responded, I don't know why they can't figure out where he is. But also, I remember...
He is somewhere. He's responded quite fast.
And I remember reading a story, I think it was last year, where his lawyer had, I think, contacted an offshore law firm to inquire about extradition laws in the Cayman Islands and the British Virgin Islands. So that's quite interesting. He's doing his research on extradition laws. But also... I didn't know this, but according to DOJ's third lawsuit, the papers that were released with that, Joe Low holds dual citizenship. So he holds a Malaysian passport and he also holds a passport for the West Indies island of St. Kitts and Nevis.
What?
Never heard
that?
Of that place.
Kind of exotic though.
Never heard of that place, but he holds another passport. I don't think that's allowed. Malaysia doesn't allow for dual citizenship.
Yeah, so when the news came out, the authorities here in Malaysia said that they were going to investigate it. Whether there's an outcome from that, you know, who knows? Well, I guess many of these 1MDB-linked investigations are quite, not as fast as we'd like them to be.
Not as fast as the response from
Joe Low. Right, there we go. Yeah, no. So once again, with a name like St. Kitts or places like St. Kitts and Nevis, you know, it shows the global reach for this 1MDB saga.
Yeah, it's gone.
Yeah, you know, Singapore,
far and wide.
The Swiss, the US DOJ, now Indonesia as well, you know, as well as the British Virgin Islands. The list goes on and on.
Yeah, speaking of 1MDB, also, remember there were also other assets allegedly bought by Low Jolo with stolen 1MDB funds, and this includes a private jet, a hotel, and real estate in New York, and also $107 million interest in EMI Music Publishing.
Oh.
Yeah, and some of these assets have been returned. Like, for example, remember Australian model and actress Miranda Kerr? Mm. She handed over millions of dollars worth of jewelry that US authorities say was given to her by Jolo.
Okay, so we're going to keep a close eye if those investigations have any developments. But let's turn our attention to Malaysian banks, because they just announced, more banks have just announced their results, and some of them have even posted record results for 2017. Before we get into the banks that did post these record results, let's take a quick snapshot of the industry as a whole.
All right, so for example, Maybank, record net profit, over 7.5 billion ringgit. Public Bank, record net profit, about 5.5 billion ringgit. Well, you know, CIMB also, you know, well, not record net profit, but still net profit rose about 26% on year. RHB also double digit on year growth for net profit. Hong Leong, likewise, for the first half, double digit on year growth. So if you use this snapshot as, say, you know, given that banks are a proxy for the local economy, mm-hmm. Looks like things are chugging along quite well, you know, in line with the better than expected GDP figures that we're seeing.
Okay,
that's top line stuff.
Is there kind of a breakdown as to why these banks have done very well?
Well, if you look at it broadly, there are a couple of key themes: lower base from 2016, thinning provisions for some, as well as cost cutting measures that have seemed to be bearing fruit. And these are for some banks that, you know, they look at cost cutting, and that's something that is starting to show results.
Okay, but while there are some who did really well, there were several banks that didn't do that well. The smaller 3A banks saw lower earnings. So that's Affin, Alliance and AmBank, the 3As, the smaller As. If you look at Alliance, their 9-month earnings fell about 3.6%. Affin saw a 10% drop for its full year 2017 net profit, and AmBank saw an 11% drop for its 9-month earnings.
Yes, if you look at AmBank, the individual third quarter results, their net profit dropped 30% to 218 million ringgit. And this was due to higher impairment losses, a lower fund management fee, and a loss in a joint venture share. So looking at it from 9 months, the net profit, as you mentioned, Mel, dropped 11% to 887 million ringgit.
Yeah, but then looking at Affin Bank in particular, though, I'm looking at this report from CIMB on mm-hmm. Affin Bank's earnings. Well, it's actually titled "A Spectacular End to FY17." So it looks like Affin Bank actually did enjoy a pickup towards the end of 2017. Now, whether or not
perhaps that quarter, last quarter,
yeah,
so, but looking at the full.
Correct.
This, it dropped a bit, yeah.
Yeah. So the question here is, you know, even with the likes of CIMB and Maybank as well, like, you know, if you use that previous quarter, whether or not that momentum will continue into 2018.
Yeah, whether they can sustain it, that is a good question, Han. That's one thing. And also cost, whether they can contain costs. Looking at AmBank, earnings aside, there's the latest news on the MSS. They're undergoing a mutual separation scheme. So a total of 1,123 applicants were approved of that, and that represents a 12% of the group's permanent workforce.
Oh, 12%. It's quite significant.
12%.
Yeah, but then if you kind of dive deeper into the industry, right, and look at their outlooks, pretty contrasting views there. You know, for example, you had Hong Leong who cut loan growth,
yes.
But RHB went the other way. You know, Joyce, you would know, NIM compression, right? That's net interest margin compression. That has been a theme mm-hmm. among local banks for so many years, right? But then now if you look, well, so, for example, you got Maybank, who appears to be more positive. They expect net interest margins to grow. Well, CIMB sees a 5 to 10 basis point reduction in net interest margin.
It's how they manage it at the end of the day. And coming back to cost as well, cost to income ratio. How are they going to manage that? Some of the banks, they've managed it well. You can see results. CIMB's cost to income ratio has come down to 51.8%. RHB has come down to 49.9%. Only AmBank, they need to manage that because their cost to income ratio is high and it is still at 58.2% according to their latest results. That's probably why they're looking at MSS as well, you know, because personnel costs increased by 73.2 million ringgit.
Yeah, they need to get that under
nearly
check,
9%
right?
Year on year.
All right, well, we're going to take a look at the banking sector and how banking stocks and how that's moving after market opens. Sabrina Magdalene is going to give you the opening numbers of Bursa Malaysia in the 9 a.m. news bulletin coming up next on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.